So what? So we're on to our
we're on to
our third track now.
Nice.
Which is the do you have the last page of the story? Because I know that's where I had some of my questions. Oh,
yeah, I got it. All right, so are we recording now?
Yeah, this is on.
Coming to you live from Waking Up Naked in Denny's parking lot.
No, that's not right.
All
right,
coming to you live from a basement in Ann Arbor.
Hello, and welcome to Words, the podcast where we talk about words and with the people who write them. I'm Phil Wittevine.
I'm Jack Bologna.
And this is The Beans. Today is February 8th. You're listening to the third episode of Words. We sit down with the youngest journalist in Ann Arbor, a fiction writer.
And me, Brandon Reich, the director of the Ann Arbor Poetry Blast.
This week, the thing we found running through the works we talked about was the next step.
So do you want to be a journalist when you're older?
Yeah.
Really? Okay. So you like it a lot?
Yeah, it's very fun.
I love future technology because it's, you know, we're doing amazing stuff right now with tech, and it's like my mind blows at the fact it's like, oh my god, like 100 years from now, what could we be doing? Like, we could actually have like spaceships and going to Mars and doing this.
It's like a walking poetry slam, I think.
This is an hour-long episode. Feel free to hit pause, press the download button, and listen at your leisure. And if you want to learn more about our contributors, go to our website at www.wordsthepodcast.com. In our first segment, we sit down with Lucy Taubier, the 10-year-old editor-in-chief of the Murray Avenue Times, the monthly newspaper devoted to covering a single neighborhood in Ann Arbor. As our youngest ever guest, she discusses her editorial decision-making and direction. Today, we're sitting down with Lucy Taubier, a very young journalist from Murray Avenue in Ann Arbor. Lucy, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I started the paper when I was about 8.
And this is the Murray Avenue Times?
Yeah, and then I took a 2-year break.
Okay.
Just because I couldn't find enough time to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, I found it when I was searching through my mom's computer, and I decided to start it again.
Okay, and so you're 10 years old right now?
Yeah.
And where do you go to school at?
Baugh Elementary.
Baugh, okay. And so, where did you initially get the idea for the Murray Avenue Times?
There was a doll that I wanted to buy, so I was looking for a way to spend money.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the middle of October, so I couldn't do a lemonade stand. So my mom suggested doing a paper.
So you sell this newspaper for $1 on your street then?
Yeah.
Okay.
What's distribution like in your operation?
Well, about twice a month I go to August Farm Stand, and I sell it there. I set up a...
Okay. Do you have a farm stand on your block? Or?
It's on Liberty, a little bit off my block.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And what do people like most about your paper?
Well, a lot of people like the trivia. Mm-hmm. And then Dave Askin, she just suggested putting in a book review. So a lot of people are emailing in the reviews.
Oh, wow. Okay. So your next issue is coming out this month, right?
Yeah.
And it has a book review in it then?
Yeah, it has like many book reviews, like 15 of them.
Wow, so this is going to be a big issue.
Yeah.
Okay. What are some of the books that they reviewed?
Well, the titles are really long, but there's one about a magician that I want to order that looks really good.
Okay.
And then a lot of them are about history, history fiction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm noticing some of these articles are written by you and like with a collaborator. So for example, this is by you and somebody called Linnea.
Yeah, she helped me that month with the paper. We do it together sometimes.
Okay, so do you consider yourself the editor, or are you
kind
mostly
like the chief editor? She helps a lot. Yeah.
Okay, gotcha. And content wise, what kind of stories do you typically like to write about?
I like to interview people about their pets or their career.
Okay.
Yeah. So I have an interview about Daisy the dog.
Okay. Can you tell us a little about Daisy the dog?
Yeah. So my beginning was Murray has roses, tulips, crocuses, and daffodils. But the Johnsons have something that no other Murray resident has, a very special daisy. And then I launched into this.
Wow, that is a lead right there. That is wow. I couldn't write that. Wow, be a journalist when you're older?
Yeah.
Really? Okay. So you like it a lot?
Yeah, it's very fun.
What do you like most about it?
I think I like doing the interviews the most, interviewing people about the Murray.
Yeah, I'm having a good time right now.
Yeah, I think we should mention, you said earlier that this is the first time you've actually been interviewed, right?
Yeah.
All right.
So how does it feel to be on the other side of, like, the table, I guess?
Funny.
Yeah?
Like, I don't have spend 5 days brainstorming questions. And,
okay. Yeah. Are we doing a good job, do you think?
Yeah.
Okay, okay. That's good. So, do you have a favorite article or story that you've written then?
Well, I think the the interview that I did for August Farm Stand.
For the August Farm Stand?
Yeah, that was my favorite.
Okay,
here it is.
Oh, the Argus one.
Yeah, okay. This is the most greatest edition.
Okay.
I interviewed Bill, his wife Kathy wasn't there that day.
Mm-hmm.
And so I interviewed about the people that come into Argus, mm-hmm. his favorite products, how it's better for the farmers.
Mm-hmm. So what? Tell us a little about the Argus Farm Stand and what did you learn about it?
Well, it opened last year, in the summer, at the end of summer.
Mm-hmm.
It sells only local produce and things, like it also sells origami, jam, candies, coasters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. And is there something that you'd like to buy from there specifically that's your favorite?
Well, the stone coasters are really pretty. They're cut from some school ground during mining session.
The stone coasters?
Yeah, and then the cinnamon hot chocolates, which is new. It's really good.
Oh, okay.
It's like a cinnamon froth.
Cinnamon froth hot. That sounds delicious,
yeah.
Especially for this time of the year.
Yeah, it's
really good. Wow. And how'd you get the idea to write about the Argus Farm Stand? Because this is your lead story right here on this. I mean, I don't want to spoil the issue.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Well, I love Argus. I could go there after school some days, and I...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I just decided it would be fun to do an interview for them.
This is a part of the Murray Avenue like neighborhood, right?
That's, yeah.
Could you maybe talk to us a little bit about Goofball?
Well, I didn't know about it until I asked my neighbor Hugh for a funny story.
Okay.
And so he sent me this.
And this is this year's Goofball Report.
Yeah.
Could you maybe read the first, like, paragraph or so?
To the parents of the Murray Avenue. Who knew goofballers? Well, once again, our goofball team, the Murray One Wears, has finished dead at last in the Ann Arbor's Goofball Week. There's so much blame to go around that I hardly know where to begin, though it's certainly not my fault.
What's the Goofball League?
I think it's some sport.
Okay.
I don't know about it, but...
Wait, can you read a little bit more?
Sure. First off, it would be helpful if your parents would go to a sporting goods store and buy your tykes some bait, sick goofball equipment, just a goofball, a shield mitt, a steel helmet, body armor, and a nibbly spiker. He lives down the street. I think he's an actor.
Okay.
Yeah, he's really funny.
Yeah, this looks great, yeah. So he said, hey, Lucy, I want to put this article in your paper then?
Yeah, I emailed him for a funny story and he sent this back.
Oh, wow. He did a great job. As the editor, how do you decide what makes it into your edition and what makes it,
Well, I'm careful not to put anything that's outside
mm-hmm.
of the kind of the movie because they'll lose the reader's interest.
Yeah, okay.
But, yeah.
Let's talk about that for a second. So why, this is like the most hyper-local journalism
yeah.
I think there is to write about the street that you live on. Why keep it so small?
Right now, all my readers are kind of inside the
mm-hmm.
neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
So if the paper does branch out, I'll probably put in just a few articles about Ann Arbor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now I do like a review on a restaurant in
okay.
downtown.
So would you branch out to other streets first or just the city in general first?
Well, this morning my mom suggested like having other kids do a franchise.
On different streets, right?
Like the Mulholland Times or just so a franchise.
Yeah.
I put together.
Huh. And do you think that would, how do you think that would work, I guess, or?
I guess it would, like, if, yeah.
Do you have any friends in mind that you're thinking about talking to?
I don't think I know any friends in the neighborhood other than Linnea or somewhere just on the street.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're putting a lot of different kinds of stuff in here. It's almost like an almanac where you have, like, in here we have steps for the best party, you know. There's,
yeah.
like, there's a balloon drop, there's night lights, party hats, sparkle punch, and then over here we have a recipe for something, for candy melts, candy bar, excuse me.
Yeah.
So, when you're putting this together, like, what's going through your mind? I mean, you got all these different kinds of things that you can put into one paper, but it seems like there's...
Yeah, it's a very eclectic mix of some pretty cool things.
Yeah, I like putting a recipe in because they're fun to type, mm-hmm. all the steps and all the different punctuation. And they're fun to, like, use one of my mom's recipes that's been passed down for traditions and put that in there.
Cool.
Like, I think I did somewhere, I did a recipe on pale gingerbread cake.
On gingerbread cake?
Pale ginger, that's been passed down for a while. It's like gingerbread cake with pears inside.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, somewhere in there.
You guys have a website, though?
I do have... My friend opened up a website for me on Weebly.
Okay.
So...
For the Murray Avenue Times?
Yeah.
Do you want to plug that right now, your website? You want to get it out on the... you know, like, just talk about your website?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So the website, I started just a few months ago. When the paper's been out for at least 3 months, I put it on to avoid, like, putting the paper on before it's sold.
Yeah, because you don't want... Okay, that's a smart decision, yeah. But so people could go on this website and look at old issues if they want an example of the Murray Avenue Times?
Yeah, and then they can download it.
Cool. So, you know, I think I told you, I tried to start a newspaper when I was, I guess, 12, 13, in, like, the 7th grade. Or 8th grade now, but I got shut down. I only made it to 2 issues because it was, I used to draw these political cartoons with, like, a friend of mine. She would draw them and I would give the ideas for it, but they were all about, like, our teachers and about things we didn't like about school, and we wanted a way to, like, you know, give these to other kids in the class and, like, disseminate these funny cartoons that we were making, and so we decided the vehicle that we were going to make was a newspaper. And the only teacher that would do this newspaper that was, like, my least favorite teacher. And so we made one issue and we got it out, and it was, like, the most tame kind of political cartoon that we had in there, and we had someone cover the JV basketball game and something else. But then for the second issue, I got shut down because I went, because what happened was, this is so long ago that we would make the paper, like, in Word like you do, but then we would put it on a floppy disk. And you know what a floppy disk is, right? Okay, thank goodness. All right, we're not that old for them.
Floppy disk life.
Yeah, floppy disk life. Hashtag floppy disk life. And so we put the newspaper on a floppy disk, and I would then, like, give that to the principal and say, like, that, you know, our moderator, our teacher, like, signed off on it. But for the second issue, I wanted it out, like, by the end of that week, and I might have told the principal that I'd gotten the okay from the teacher. And I kind of didn't, and I went over my moderator's head and got shut down. So, but it looks like you're doing swimmingly.
Because you're the top of the
fiction, you are.
Your own organization.
That's what I should have done.
Yeah, it should have just been like a startup.
I just didn't have the confidence that you do, I guess. I don't, yeah.
I tried to do an essay about homework.
Yeah?
And why I hated third grade, but my teacher made me change, like, more than 3/4 of it.
What?
So it was just...
Wow, that's censorship.
That is, wow.
I don't like homework because it takes up time.
Jack just recently reached the point in his life where he doesn't have to do any more homework.
I know, but I graduated from college in December, but, like, now I really miss it, actually. I'm like, yeah.
Next year I'll have way more homework.
Is that when you, what grade will you be in then?
Middle school. Now I think 2 pages is a lot. My friend told me, like, 6 pages will be minimum next year.
Oh, that's a tough middle school.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how's the February issue of the Murray Avenue Times shaping up so far? I mean, it's the, is it the 7th today? So you're just at the beginning, but where do you...
Well, I did 2 pages already. I have an article about Slip City that I need to edit, and half a review for Knights, for the new brand.
I should say, that's going to be great for Dave. I think Slip City is really going to take off.
Slip City's getting a lot of media coverage. Yeah, I mean, where's the podcast? Murray Avenue Times. Like,
I think I have something else. And then I'll do an ad for August.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you've got advertisements in this newspaper.
Yeah.
Oh,
sometimes
wow.
Sometimes I'll put in an ad for my neighbor's Vicky store, Heavenly Metal.
Wow. We need to hire her as our business manager.
Yeah, no, this is like a very finely run
I'll
operation.
Pay people, if they've donated something to the paper, I'll pay them in a free paper.
Wow.
Subscriptions.
This is, wow. You've got a good system going on.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah. So what issue are you up to now? You started in October, is that right? Or
I started on October, paper. Well, actually, the first one came out in November.
Okay.
Then December. And then, wait, October, November. Mm-hmm. Then I took a break for December, mm-hmm. January, and now I'm working on the fourth one, which will be February.
Okay, this is officially year two of your enterprise. So far in I guess the first year of your print run, what's the response been like? Because you've been interviewed and you've had like a lot of Have you had a positive response from the community that you're writing about on Survey?
Yeah, a lot of more people have started ordering it, and now I have orders like outside.
Wow. Okay. That's awesome.
So out of curiosity, if you don't want to disclose this, but how many people are reading the Maria of New Times each month?
I think six people order it. Mm-hmm. They have, then two people have year-round subscriptions.
Nice.
And then when people see me ordering it and they forgot to pay for it, they'll order one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
And then also other articles, so I'll probably sell like 10 editions.
Okay, yeah.
Give 10 away to the people who donated.
Nice.
So.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you are kind of like a public media. Like, you know, NPR and PBS, like, they're kind of
donation
like,
run a little bit.
Yeah. Okay, that's cool.
Okay. And what do you have, like, a mission statement for the Murray Avenue Times? I know initially it was to buy this doll. Which, did you actually buy the doll that you
did? I think I gave up on it because I found something else that was more affordable.
Okay, yeah.
So, I guess the mission is to get more people learning about the street and all of its people.
Yeah. I bet it probably brings the street together a lot more, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
I was going to write about the block party, but every year it gets rained out. It's just... every year.
When is the block party going to be this year?
It's always in September.
Okay.
But it's always pouring.
Well, that would be a big event for the Murray Avenue Times to cover. That'd be really important.
All the food that was there and the bouncy castle that... Well, we hired the bouncy castle for last year,
mm-hmm.
and there was leaks in it.
Oh.
But still, it was drier than outside.
Yeah.
And it was fun because it was like a slip and slide.
Yeah. I hope more people continue to read the Murray Avenue Times. I found it really entertaining and really interesting. It's so terrific that you're already doing this newspaper on your own.
Yeah, it's fun.
Well, Lucy, it's been a pleasure sitting down with you. And just good luck with this month's edition. And everybody out there, you should check out Lucy, her website online for older editions, and maybe order some new ones for this month.
How can people get in contact with the Murray Avenue Times?
Well, I forgot. So my Weebly account, and then my email address, which is lucy.is.here.101@gmail.com.
Okay, so that's lucy.is.here.101@gmail.com.
And we can post that in the show notes, too.
In the second segment, writer Jacob Confitti discusses his story titled For Your Viewing Pleasure, a dystopian tale told in first person by Jordan, a half-man, half-robot forced to fight in arenas for the entertainment of the wealthy.
The story is framed by a challenging bout he has with a young up-and-coming fighter.
Jordan's son and wife attend the fight, and the story closes with Jordan wondering how long he can keep his own son from the perils of these 22nd century gladiator games.
We discuss our own fighting techniques,
like biting,
the extremes of student debt, and the 1%.
Jacob Confitti, author of For Your Viewing Pleasure. So this is definitely a piece of science fiction, and we're in the 22nd century, mm-hmm. and we have this dystopia that I'm really interested in finding out more about. It seems like a plutocracy, like ruled by the rich, but it's also like this military industrial complex where like basically money is power is like guns and
shit. So I guess I'll start with, I started this, the idea for the story came from I was playing, getting ready to play a game of League of Legends, and I was trying to think of a story because I was going to write for this anthology book,
mm-hmm.
and I'm like, I need an idea, and I was like, I'll do something, take my mind off it, and I started playing, I was like, wait a minute, these are like combat, like gladiators, I'll make a gladiator story, and it came to me. So then I was like, okay, so how can I get a sci-fi gladiator story? And I was like, well, you know, everyone's complaining about the 1% and the kind of the paranoia of them taking over, let's push it to the next step, and they actually take over, where these companies are ruling and kind of they put so much money in the politician's pocket that the politicians are just their puppets.
Yeah, and so this story then is set in 2118, if I'm correct, right? So, you know, 100 years in the future, where, yeah, people are kind of forced through indebtedness and kind of go into these gladiator type, like almost like ancient Rome, kind of battle arenas.
Yep. Indentured fight to the death.
Yeah, yeah. Indentured fight so it's kind of like this, whole big return, you know, 2,000 years ago, this is what we did, and now we're doing it again.
Because, what, you know, once you're, this far in the future, boxing and MMA fights, it's kind of boring. I want blood and I want guts, so start these fights.
Wow, okay. And then, so, but tell us a little about the main character, though, Jordan.
So, Jordan, the way I, imagined him, and I didn't get too deep into it because, didn't have enough space. Mm-hmm. But he is just this guy who was a normal dude. He had a position, a job working for one of these companies, was trying to be him, but then something, kind of through a series of, mistakes he made, or the company itself was kind of looking for the right genetic match for these tests, he kind of fit the bill and they grabbed him.
Yeah.
And was like, okay, so here's how this is going to happen. You are going to take these tests, you're going to take these modifications, and you're going to fight for us.
Yeah.
And if you don't, we're going to kill your family.
Wow.
And they're just going to hold him ransom. It's like, yeah, we don't really care. No one's going to stop us, so you're going to do this for our pleasure.
Okay. So for your viewing pleasure.
Exactly.
And so, the whole story opens up then. At the actual fight of the night, and the whole story takes place within the story of the night of the fight.
It's hard to tell a man with power what to do. It's impossible to tell a man with money what to do. Origins unknown. Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to thank you all for coming out tonight. We have a number of excellent fights this evening. If you would all focus your attention towards the red entrance, I'll introduce our first combatant. The fight announcer's voice sent waves of excitement through the crowd, sending them into a fury of waving arms and joyful cheers. I stood in a tunnel behind a large metal portcullis, mentally preparing myself for the fight. I hadn't needed handlers since my first year, so I stood alone in the cold concrete hallway.
And I love that line, I hadn't needed handlers, because it kind of introduces this concept that Jordan, who is now this fighter, is kind of lost himself to the fight a little bit. Talk about that weird mix between man and animal and, I guess, machine.
So, it came down to, when I said he needed handlers, because the first year he's super against this, he's trying his best to get out of it and find ways so he would, a fight would start, and he would just try and run back and just get away. And so they have these armed guards; they would just knock him back and throw him into the fight and make him do it. And so slowly he kind of gets beaten down enough where it's like, I just have to do this, and it's I have no choice.
Wow.
And so he's kind of that's why I'm kind of reading it with a dull, just monotony, because it's like, I cannot get out of this. This is the only thing I can do.
Wow.
So it's just, he's like a beaten down man that, can't actually die.
So I guess maybe it's a little bit early to jump into these social bends, but is this something when you said you were thinking about the 1%, or when you're thinking about the social issues when you're writing this, do you think that a lot of people nowadays just feel like they have no other options and maybe they take a job that they hate? And hopefully it's not a gladiator type job where they have to kill other human beings, but to pay the bills, how do you think this story relates to today?
I think it's pretty true. I think it's pretty solid that, the higher you get into a company, CEOs and, the 1%, not all of them, of course, but some have this complete disconnect from people below them. And then these guys have to, are stuck working under these CEOs and these, masters of economy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I just need to get through. I just need to make enough money to send my kids to school, put food on the table, put a roof under her head.
That's becoming increasingly difficult.
Exactly, because what is it? The middle class is shrinking. Every year it seems like it's getting smaller and smaller.
Yeah.
And so the gaps between poor and rich are getting larger. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like people are getting to the point where, at least I think, that it's like, I will work and do whatever I have to make money to, save my family. The story of the Detroiter who was walking 21 miles a day. Yeah. It's like, that sucks, but he has to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, hopefully he doesn't have to start fighting in the arenas. Yes,
And if he does, then it's, I guess, you gotta do what you gotta do.
Exactly. Maybe he'll just be really good at it.
Yeah, that seems, that strikes me as a step beyond delusion, or disillusionment. It's the term from intro psychology that pops into my head is learned helplessness, where they just electrocute people until they just stop caring.
Yeah.
About, so I got a sense of that dull, survival mindset. And I also like that line for a different reason, because you bring up the handlers and it just becomes a part of the detail. And I like that implicit world building, because it seems like a more natural way to enter this space.
It's such
with.
A small detail, but it tells so much about it just kind of gives us an idea of what he's been in years past.
And that's something, to take this story to even a further, to make it even better, you could keep building on that idea of just like the handlers, like that gives you a place to like explore further into the world. Not only that, but then also just this idea of being forced into a ring and then just not caring anymore. You're your own handler.
Yes.
So that was really cool for me.
But I guess I think there's a little bit of a counter to that helplessness, in a sense, or at least that feeling of helplessness. On page 3, this is one of the fighters yelling at Jordan, the main character, and this fighter is like, he's very angry at him. He's pumping himself up. He's getting ready for the fight.
All right. I don't care how long you've lasted, you washed up hack, Calvert yelled at me. When the bell rings, I'm going to cut you up into little pieces. Then I'll be the champion. I'll be a king. Electricity arced from his back to a metal plate in the side of his head. His head jerked away from the shock, but otherwise he didn't respond.
Yeah, I love that line, I'll be a king, because it's so ironic. Because he's ultimately powerless, and he's being forced into this fight. I mean, he's being thrown in this ring, but he's like, I'm going to be a king, I'm going to be a hero. But it's like, no, like, was that something you consciously were putting in there, or is that just, that irony,
Yeah, no, I absolutely did. It was like, okay, so, you got these guys who are in positions of, like, meager power, mm-hmm. and they just take over. It's like, yeah, I'm going to be, like, the best I am, but they're obviously, like, a puppet, and they have no control, and that's kind of what Calibur is. He isn't really, like, a smart guy. He's not, obviously, mentally stable, so he's just grasping on the one piece of power he can get, which is, like, I can beat him, and I'll be the best fighter, and I'll be the king of the, like, gladiators and whatever.
This would be a great time for you to read from like the very bottom of page 4. That explains like that whole idea.
Back in the early 2000s, the government fought for equality and keeping things fair. As the decades passed by, the people became insignificant. Only the numbers and money mattered. The government started looking to the 1% to help them out when they needed money or resources. Slowly, the government didn't fight for the average man anymore, but for the corporations that were funding them.
Sure. So when I was reading this, I saw like a lot of parallels between football in the NFL, and just the way people are like, players sacrifice their bodies.
Yeah.
And when they're in the moment, they're like, I love it. I'm the best. You know, you have people who like have all kinds of,
they have the big cars, the big houses.
And this is what everybody looks at. They glorify the sport, but in the long run, they're destroying themselves,
Yeah, and if you think about it, there's a lot of people that come from, like, low-income places that, think, like, that see football as this way to, make it out and make it big. And some of them do, but yeah, like you seem to say, like, you were probably going to end up with, like, Parkinson's or, $30. I mean, I don't say probably, but I mean, because that research is still ongoing, but, like,
going to end up with some mental illness.
Yeah, or physical debilitations, like, just awful knees. I mean, like, there's just such a physical toll on it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess you seem... I mean, were you going to ask, how's that playing into your story, or...?
As far as, like, the idea that these guys are just, like, just being used for their entertainment?
Yeah, just for your viewing pleasure.
Yeah.
It kind of, like, relates to it. Like, I've got a brother who's super into football and stuff, and he really likes it, but I've not been a big sports guy.
Yeah.
And I kind of, like, will sit there and watch and be like, God damn, these guys are just beating the hell out of each other. It's like... And they've only got, a good lineman can last maybe 10 years in the league before they got just too much damage and accumulates and they're done.
Yeah.
That's kind of, like, the same thing with this. It's like... these guys are going in and fighting and they're just putting the toll on yourself, but no one cares because, hey, we're having a great time watching it. Keep doing it.
Yeah, and then, the roster, the roster changes every year, but you still cheer for the team,
Mm-hmm. It's the idea of the team, not so much the players.
Yeah, really.
The thing that comes to mind for me is, in the ancient Roman times, like, the bread and circus idea, or, like, how do you keep the people, like, happy, it's like, give them food and, like, give them gladiator games, So, like, it seems like a parallel there.
So how do you, like, when you write, because you write more science fiction as well, how do you strike the balance between exposition and then kind of, like, the story itself, Because, I mean, I feel like, not to, like, pigeonhole science fiction writers, but I think that's, it's kind of a struggle where, like, you have to create a world, and you have to also create a story within that, I mean, as opposed to just writing a story about the everyday. How do you try and balance that?
Well, in my mind, I like to, like, obviously while I'm writing, I'm kind of playing the scene in my head and how I look at it, and I think, okay, what's the most, like, easy way this is going to flow together? So, my idea was that he's standing in this, like, portcullis waiting for the gate to lift, and he's just, like, thinking back. He's like, God damn it, why are we here? And he's like, it's because these guys did this. And then you, like, open the gate, and all of a sudden, exposition over, you're trying to get in the fight. So you have this lull where nothing's really happening, but you can fill it with exposition. At least I like to think so.
Yeah.
But I'm still getting a little... I always, like, worry about doing too much exposition because, it's like, oh, this is kind of like... So many words. Why is something happening?
Got to keep the reader in it.
A lot of problems I have with writing science fiction or reading science fiction is when you get to certain specifics of, like, So when I was reading the story, and then you got to the vibroblade, and I was like, okay, well, what is the vibroblade?
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, you're reading on, but like in the moment when you mention it, I want to think about like what it is, and then I want to know what it is.
Mm. But I mean, when you mention like, the vibroblade, which is the sword he has, right? I mean, like, I feel like, you know, I got the idea of it, you know, pretty.
Yeah, I'm kind of like voicing off like a lot, like, you know, I've played a lot of sci-fi, I've read a lot of sci-fi, I've seen a lot of sci-fi movies, and these things are all kind of standard in my mind. It's like, oh yeah, these, like, the sword that vibrates so quickly that it slips through the molecules and cuts the thing in half, or, you know, this fire sword that literally is just, like, basically a lightsaber, essentially. And so, to me, those are kind of, like, standards. Like, if someone says, I pulled my blaster out and shot at someone, you'd immediately know what it is. Maybe I'm kind of a snob because I've, you know, read so much of this and lived so much of sci-fi.
Snob. Yeah.
How dare I?
What's a blaster? Blasting.
Wait, lasers don't work like that. Shut up. But yeah, so I don't know, I kind of like assumed when I wrote it, it's like, oh yeah, maybe like understand immediately what this vibroblade is. And so I kind of gave that basic name where you'd be like, oh, okay, so it vibrates?
Yeah.
I mean, I got it later on, but in the moment.
It's kind of like, wait, what's this?
But I do have to say, you know, we just talked about, you know, exposition of the story, but I think there is a lot of heart, and that really comes out at the ending. And I wish I had, like, a little bit more heart at the end, because, I mean, like, yeah, at the ending is, like, what we realize, that he fights a lot because he doesn't want his son to end up where he is, because his son is, what, 13 years old or something
like
that,
right? Yeah, he's, like, just a child.
Okay, but, you know, but in a couple of years, he will be a man, you know, and he's kind of got this... And they threaten that, you know, the managers of Jordan talking about the next fight. And obviously, Jordan just finished up this fight and his hand cut off, which will regrow, but it's going to be a while. And he's pretty tired and they just want him to fight more.
It's going
to
take him about a day.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the idea was like your body requires, you know, obviously energy to do anything. And so if you're just re-knitting an entire arm, you need a ton of energy. And he's just burnt out because he just got finished with the fight.
What would the odds would be if Jordan was given a partner to help him fight tomorrow? I think there'd be much more in his favor, in our favor.
He clapped his hands together. Excellent. Have Jordan's son in the match with him tomorrow. Give him a big gun and tie some grenades to his chest. If he can't shoot any dead, maybe he'll be able to blow a few up on the way out. Nor stared me down with a predatory grin as the men around him chuckled. I sighed. That won't be necessary, sir. I can win on my own. Nor took on a mock tone of compassion. Are you sure, son? We don't want you to put yourself in danger or anything. I ground my teeth together. I'll be fine.
Yeah, that part, it just really hits because through this whole story, you know, it's been a lot of, you know, fighting, and, like, you obviously, you kind of, you're in Jordan's corner, and, like, you know he has a family, but, like, at this point, like, you really kind of realize why he was doing this. I guess, you know, why didn't you put more of the family in throughout the story, or, like, why didn't, like, because there's a part of me I was wondering, like, I thought there could have been a great place, like, a flashback to a time maybe when Jordan wasn't a fighter, and he got to be with his family, before he had to, you know, this lifestyle was thrown upon him. Did you ever imagine any of that?
I had, like, an inkling of the idea, and I was like, okay, so his family's gonna be like this, and his son's gonna kind of be like, you know, just growing up, and his dad wants to shield him as much as he can from all the terrible shit that's happening around him. But I didn't, you know, kind of go into the family too much because I was afraid of the exposition. Like, at this moment, things were kind of happening and was, like, moving on to the next fight. I didn't want to drag the viewer down and pull him out of the moment by, like, okay, and so now we're going to flash back to when Jordan wasn't this terrible, like, murdering master, master of murder. And so I was kind of afraid of that. And then it was, like, a time constraint, too. So I figured I'd leave it up to the viewer to think about. Like, okay, so what kind of father was he? He's obviously a good one, but, like, what happened?
Yeah.
So
I was curious about, at the end, like, what's to stop? Why doesn't Jordan think, like, his son is gonna go into that life anyway?
Truth be told, there's not really, like, anything that stopped him. Like, if the guys came up to his, like, family probably and said, hey, I don't think I gave the son a name. Let's call him Sam. Hey, Sam, do you want to do the fights like your dad? Like, he's a pretty tough guy. I mean, you want to be a tough man like him, right? And they could probably convince this child to do it. The mom would be against it. The dad would be against it. But he's a child. He kind of, like, you know, any child normally will kind of idolize their father or their mother. And it's like, oh, I want to be like them. And if he'd find out, he'd be, like, devastated.
Yeah.
But it's possible. It could happen.
Yeah.
But he's going to do his best to avoid that.
He's just trying to push it off as long as possible and keep his son. Yeah, so what do you imagine, like, maybe the interactions between the son and the dad to be like?
I imagine,
how often do they, I guess, interact?
I figure it's kind of like, like, you know how bands have tours and they're gone for, like, a couple months and they come back? I kind of imagine like that. So, you know, he's got, like, he'll have a week or two of fighting. Like, just straight up, he's gone, he's gone, he's gone, and then he'll be back for a few days, and he'll be with his family, and he'll get to, like, be a normal dad for a little bit. And then he gets whisked away again for another batch of fights. And so it's constantly, like, moving and going and stuff.
Okay.
I think if we got a feel of that in the story, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think what we're kind of arriving
to as a conclusion as a whole here is just like there seems to be a lot of stuff going on that could be further explored. Like this seems like a very small segment of a much larger story almost that could be drawn out, and the structure of that story could be like what you're talking about. Like this is one fight in a much larger lifestyle that has this huge history behind it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess this is a really cool world that you made.
I'm not gonna lie, when I wrote this, I it was just a short story. I was just like, okay, so I'll write this. But the more I worked on it, more I'm like, okay, you know, I kind of was thinking maybe I could do like a full story, like a full book or something. And I did have a bunch of ideas, and like you said, kind of following him on this. But there's going to be like a revolution. He was going to be like the figurehead and stuff.
Yeah.
Kind of like a very Hunger Games esque, where Katniss is turned into the figurehead, but she kind of doesn't want it.
Yeah.
Similar to him, he's like, "Oh, I don't want to do this. Like my family's still under question. No, we'll save your family. Don't worry."
Yeah.
But that's like would be way down the road for me.
Okay.
Speaking of Hunger Games, this is definitely like a piece of science fiction, right? Is there anything within that genre you feel you're influenced by, or strongly even taking after, or?
I'm definitely, it's like just future technology. In like, I love future technology because it's, you know, we're doing amazing stuff right now with tech, and it's like my mind blows at the fact is like, oh my god, like 100 years from now, what could we be doing? Like, we could actually have spaceships and going to Mars and doing this. Yeah. I love that, and so I think that's like the major thing. Like, was it the tech were good enough to make him the genetic modification that he is, or creating Calibur, the cyborg fighter? And it's just, that's like the main influence, I think, from any sci-fi story.
Yeah.
Because, you know, any sci-fi story can be broken down and be like, all right, so here's like this here's like this thing. Mm-hmm. Let's learn some weird, wacky technology and aliens into it. And now we have a sci-fi story.
Yeah.
So.
See if we can bend and break humans and see what way we can,
pardon me, push it.
Yeah, I really thought this, this is me going on a limb here. This is like a high concept take on the student loan bubble. Right now. And, I mean, because people all the time, you know, they compare it to the housing crisis.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, the housing crisis, I mean, people were able to walk away from the houses, and then, like, that essentially kind of created, like, this burst of the bubble.
Mm-hmm.
With student loans, I mean, like, if I were to die, like, my loans would then be, like, my parents have to pay off my loans. Like, there's, you cannot get rid of them, you know. And so, there was a part where I was like, well, student loans are just going to keep going up, tuition's going to keep going up until some point the system breaks, and we resort to college graduates with huge amounts of, you know, money.
Vibrosaurs and fighting to
the death. Yeah, fighting to the death.
Colleges are sponsoring their teams now.
Yeah, to get rid of their student debt. Is that what you believe will happen? Will I have to be a gladiator in the near future?
Yes or no?
Yeah, yes or no. This is
yes or no? Okay, yeah, it's going to happen. Sorry.
Right. I have to start working out. I have to,
no offense, you're a little scrawny. I probably one of the football players or something, or the larger guys.
I'm a biter, okay?
Oh, yeah. I'm scrappy.
Oh, yeah.
That's a quote. I'm a biter.
I'm taking however you want to
make it. Yeah, however you want to take that one, Phil.
No. I just think I don't know. Just like onwards the podcast.
I'm a biter.
Hashtag I'm a biter.
Don't worry, it's a soft bite.
So
I wasn't gonna read that into like a bad way.
I was gonna make it.
I thought you were saying that you were like scrappy.
No, I know. Yeah, I am. I'll fight Darkseid. You know, if I have to pay off my student loans, then that's how I have to do it. That's, you know.
Well,
that's the word. That's the word on student loans. Be a biter.
Yes.
Not discuss the level of snow.
We need to talk more about snow because there's
snow.
Too much of it.
Is
it
top?
You should love snow this much. You should love it in January, but now it's February. You should not
have
like
written
it.
Have you read my story about snow?
You didn't write a snow
story. Snow story.
Hey guys.
What?
Yeah, my segment's coming up. You guys forget already?
Oh no, of course not. We're very professional.
From my basement in Ann Arbor.
Alright, let's focus here. My name is Brandon Reish, and I'm going to talk about the Ann Arbor Poetry Blast.
Basement with Brandon Reish, who's here to talk to us about the poetry, the Ann Arbor Poetry Blast.
What's the Ann Arbor Poetry Blast?
That's what I want to know. What makes it a blast?
So, yeah, please, yeah, Brandon,
well,
please explain.
We went through some other names. We were looking at.
Yeah, what were some of the names that we threw out?
I'm allowed to curse. I'm allowed to curse.
You're allowed to curse. Yeah.
So I guess it's kind of like a poetry smash. Slam, sorry.
The Ann Arbor Poetry Smash was one of the names that we thought about.
It's like Poetry Slam plus one.
It's like a walking Poetry Slam, I think.
So, yeah, but to back up a little bit, so this is, but you listen through this app called Recco, which is available to download for free, and is working excellently on Apple devices, but is having some problems right now on Android. But if you have an iPhone, I highly suggest you download it. We'll have a link up on our website. But just explain a little bit about the app and how that works.
So I guess the app, it like ties sounds to geolocation. Mm-hmm. So it has like a little compass, and you know, when you walk around, you'll see dots, mm-hmm. like pins, yeah. On the map. And if you just go to that direction, eventually you'll get within its like radius, and it'll just trigger the sound automatically.
Yeah. So we were just playing around with it just before this this recording, one of the sounds that I dropped at my house personally was that poem Invictus. Mm-hmm. Just as you know, that sounds, and that worked perfectly on the phone.
Used to be like, so within how close?
15 meters.
15,
yeah.
So 15 meters is the number.
Yeah. So if I'm walking around Ann Arbor and I've got my Reco. I've got my Reco app up, and mm-hmm. I see a pin, and I'm like, oh, let me see where this goes. And then mm-hmm. I come up here, and I'm at Jack's house. And I'm like, oh, this weird house. I wonder what's happened. It's gonna. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna get Invictus. I'm gonna get.
That's a good
I am
poem.
The captain of my soul.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
504 Benny.
Yeah.
Okay.
504 Benny. I like that.
And so by the end of March, there will be these little dots all around the city, and the whole city will become this walking tapestry then. But the cool thing too is that we're also going to be having these poems up online to read, I think, if we can. And then we're also going to have kind of an interactive Google Maps, so you can kind of just know where some of these sounds are out. And so the idea though is that 100 different poems by 100 different people about 100 different spots all throughout Ann Arbor by the end of March, right? Or April 5th?
First week in April.
Yeah, and so why is this project exciting to you? I mean, I've loved working with you on it so far. You've just been tremendous on it. But yeah, just talk a little bit why you like it.
Well, I love Ann Arbor, obviously, you know, as you guys too, do too. And I think there are some places here that have special meaning for us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the basement of the ugly. No, not the big, not the ugly.
Or third floor.
The third floor, yeah.
Third floor, yeah.
On the way out.
Or BTP Cantina when it's Friday night and $6 nacho bar.
Wayfield.
Yeah, or the Wayfield. Yeah, the Wayfield.
I love the Wayfield.
I bet someone can write a killer poem about the Wayfield on North Campus.
Well, I'm sure they could.
That might be you, you see.
I don't know.
But please, Brandon, yeah, continue. Yeah.
No, well, that's the point, you know, that North Campus, wherever your favorite place is. Personally, I've never been to North Campus, and I've been to North Campus. Like, I like the Arboretum.
Mm-hmm.
That's a special place for me.
So we're just kind of like adding a layer of topography. Like, there's going to be a sound. It's not just going to be like, I don't know, geotagged poetry. This is just an idea I've never really heard of before. It's like a really novel, like, cool thing that's...
It is exciting. You know, I mean, I think if we do this right and we get enough buy-in from people and people really... I think the big tipping point, and correct me if I'm wrong, is just getting people to buy in, to try out this app, and then to maybe write a poem themselves.
Yeah.
And what would you say to someone out there to convince them to say, like, hey, take some time out of your day, think of your favorite spot, and write this poem? Like, what's...
Yeah, well, I think everyone is really a writer and a reader of poetry,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Whether they know it or not.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, go out, listen to these poems by local authors
mm-hmm.
about their favorite locations. And it's not just like, oh, like, here are the poems, like, on our website. You know, it's more the experience, the listening experience
mm-hmm.
is different than... First of all, it's not, you're not reading a poem.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people, like, we're in the classroom so much that we're just reading a lot of poetry, but poetry really is meant to be spoken.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the listening experience, and then add that with like the context, the location,
mm-hmm.
and throw in technology, and you got
something really cool. Yeah.
What I was thinking about when I heard about this project, and why are you talking about it just now? I was thinking about the transition from oral storytelling to writing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like when writing came about, there was like the whole issue of is it gonna be like death to the
mm-hmm.
old form of poetry reading, I mean,
mm-hmm.
where people like memorize, like,
the
Iliad. And,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, there's parts of the Iliad that are written solely to help you remember where you are in the story, so you can keep remembering and orally transmitting it. And that's really, like, yeah, that's really interesting what you say, because I know that there was a time that I'm going to really vaguely reference a historical fact that, like, it was considered the norm to, like, read what you're, like, the written word out loud, you know, and it was kind of, like,
mm-hmm.
unnatural just to read in your head. Now I think
mm-hmm.
we've gotten to a place with the way that we, like, consume information where it's just, like, very individual and very, you know, solipsistically containing your own little experience, and so this is kind of an exception to that in a really cool way. So, but the first thing that I thought of when I heard people talking about this idea was, what happens when everybody chooses the cube? Like, or something like that, you know, like, what if there's
a question? That is a good question. There is actually an answer to that. That has to do with level through, you know, likes or shares or whatever. The popular palms would, like, come to the surface.
Okay.
And be more likely to trigger. So, yeah, that is a thing.
Cool. Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And I think the really cool thing about this, and it's kind of one that it's hard for us to think of right now, is the potential in 5 to 10 years to look back and realize that we kind of, if this is really successful, that we kind of created, like, this archive of a year of Ann Arbor through poetry. And people, they could kind of think back and say, like, what was Ann Arbor like in 2015? And be like, oh, there's 100 from poems, but 100 from places. This is what it was like in 2015. I mean, and, you know, who knows how long we can get this to be archived and listened to, but I think it would just be fascinating to, over the years, just imagine a city in terms of poetry about it.
One of the things that we were talking about with the library is finding a way to make it, like, more platform independent, which I was really curious about as well, because you were talking about working through RECA, but then you have people like me who, like, went to Rite Aid, spent $10 on this. So, like...
and Phil, for those who can't see, Phil's holding up his phone, which is not a smartphone.
It's very dumb. It's very...
it's the Ur phone. It's like,
IQ in the idiot range.
That's an actual statistic, not a derogatory term.
No, there's an actual idiot. It's an actual word.
It's an actual word.
Oh, wow. It's the Forrest Gump of phones. It's a positive. It's a positive.
Okay, so he's got so much vast potential.
It just never stops running. You know, it has endurance. It has stamina. You know, to give it that.
It's a piece of Americana.
Okay, I'll take it.
That's true. Well, but I mean, you know, this is why I think we're going to have some options to look online and see what poetry is available. And even people that don't have a smartphone, like, we still, like, want your poetry, I think. And there's ways we can get you in studio. Because right now, on your phone, you can record up to 30 seconds. But we would love it, you know, if you have a great poem that you want to write, and it's an epic. You write this epic about maybe Zingerman's Deli. That is just, like, this ode that takes 8 minutes to recite. I mean, like, I'd be down to bring you in studio and hear all 8 minutes of that, you know, not just 30 seconds.
We need Jeff to write that one about the food.
Jeff Garland, yeah, Jeff Garland. Talk about people using the platform. I think one of the cool things about this, too, is that they don't necessarily have to. This is something that people can independently, and from now on, like, just drop a poem wherever they want to say. I mean, I think our biggest role is almost just to encourage people to be dropping these poems. I mean, obviously, we'd like it if they would contact us and we could work with them to then promote that, too. But, yeah, just talk about how anyone can really use the app and to drop a poem.
Yeah, I mean, the app, they kind of, there's, like, kind of two ways that they think it could be useful. One is the curated way that we're kind of using. Mm-hmm. Like, they did some RECO in, it's the guys who do it are from...
Copenhagen, Denmark.
Yeah, Copenhagen. And so they did, like, a Copenhagen, like, treasure hunt where they, like, placed, like, clues around the city. Mm-hmm. And they did a couple other cool events, like at a music festival, more like a social thing. Mm-hmm. So it could kind of be like this plan thing or also just a social thing, like, oh, like, go out, like, and listen to these sounds that your friends are, you know, dropping around the area. Mm-hmm. But what was the question again?
anybody can use it?
Yeah, anybody.
Anybody.
Yeah.
Anybody
so,
can drop.
And can you drop a poem, like, anywhere from anywhere? Like,
well, you have to, on your phone, you have to drop it where you are currently at.
Oh, okay. So, yeah. Okay, so you actually have to physically go drop your poem in the place you want it to be. Okay.
And you have, like, a range? I remember I wrote a poem that was, like, after a football game, and I had to walk from...
This is perfect. So the really cool thing is you could drop that poem in 30-second segments along the walk. And so a person could begin at one segment and they could listen to it, and then as they walk, they would continue the poem.
That's interesting. Yeah,
and that would be like a pathway that you would walk down and you would, like, listen to the sound. So that's, I think, like, would be. I mean, I think our plan is to, maybe when the snow melts a little bit, to do some Robert Frost that you have to, like, walk through to, like, listen to it in the arb. Yeah, you know, I'm like, and it's like you have to take the road to listen to it, you know.
That will be a real road less traveled by. You can actually travel by, and then suddenly that'll be
that's
the road
that
everybody
not taken.
Yeah.
We need to find, like, the yellow wood, and then we'll be fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, the point is that there's a lot of opportunities and things we can do with this, and if we just get creative, it could be a lot of fun, and you know, get the community involved.
Yeah. So really, Ann Arborites, students, teachers. young kids, old kids, anybody with a smartphone, people without a smartphone, you know, we'd love for you guys to get involved in this project. I think if everyone gets involved, it makes it cooler and cooler. The more people we can incorporate in this, the more poems we can get, the more of a tapestry we can create about this city and talk about why we really like it.
Thanks for listening. Remember to tune in next week.
Words is imported and reassembled from parts originally made in China, Afghanistan, and parts of the former Soviet Union. It was then shipped express from Durham, North Carolina.
Phil, knock it off.
This is the most disorganized podcast.
Guys, come on, okay? Words was produced in Ann Arbor. It is hosted by The Beans, Phil Wittevine, and Jack Bologna. Jack Bologna is the show's creator. Brandon Reich is the director of the Ann Arbor Poetry Blast. Diane Thatch is our artist, and you are the listener. Now, the outtakes.
How do you feel about, like, goblins?
About goblins?
Should goblins be able to access it? Or
if they have a smartphone?
I mean, because, like, you don't want, like, we'll be walking down there, oh, what is this one?
Oh my god! I'm so worried. Nobody brought it up.
I'm just really.
Yes, goblins.
Yes to goblins. How do you know goblins speak?
You know what? I just realized. I think I went to a party here 2 years ago.
No way.
Because I think I'm starting to remember this wall and all this graffiti stuff. Because I was like, when I walked in, I'm like, this looks really familiar for some reason.
That's awesome. Was Kappa Kappa drunk still on the wall?
I don't even remember. I was drunk myself.
Okay. Wait, do you actually live down here, Jack?
I mean, so we should
the studio.
We should make a note because this is like a multi-purpose space.
This is a multi-purpose space.
This is like
stupid Johnny. This is where he left me. This is where he said he doesn't love me anymore. And you know what? Screw you, Johnny.
I had to write a paper once on a piece of art for an English class.
Yeah,
that was hard.